Hello, my name is Jason Ackerson from Texas A&M University. Before we get started, I'd like to thank my advisors, Dr. Morgan in the back, shout out, and Kevin McInnes, and importantly, also Dr. Mark Everett, who joined us from the Department of Geophysics to help out a lot with this project. Today I'll be discussing three-dimensional electrical resistivity, measurement of water content, and cracking in a vertisol. So, as many of you may know, vertisols are soils very high in clay content. In soil taxonomy, they're classified based on their shrink swell potential. And so when these soils get wet, they swell and they increase in volume. And as they dry down, they shrink. And because of this shrink swell process, the hydraulic properties of the soils are highly dominated by water content. So we see water content controls a lot of the hydraulics within the system. Most specifically, today I'll be talking about surface cracking and the importance of cracks hydrologically. When we think about cracking at the surface, what we often find is that cracks function to intercept runoff and store precipitation. If we were to do a standard curve number analysis, so on the x-axis here we're plotting precipitation and runoff, and this is in a vertisol watershed in Texas, what we'd normally expect is that after a certain threshold of precipitation values, we would see a kind of direct increase of runoff for each additional value of precipitation. But what we find in vertisol watersheds is that this watershed response is very dependent on the status of surface cracks. So you could have nearly 130 millimeters of rain, and if the cracks are closed, so not intercepting runoff, we see most of that water comes out as runoff in the watershed. However, for the same magnitude precipitation event, we can see down in these lower points, when the cracks are open, most of the runoff is intercepted and not most of the precipitation, is intercepted and not partitioned into runoff. So how do we fix this in hydraulic modeling? We need to find some way to account for cracking. And to do this, we need to be able to model cracking spatially and geometrically. So you see the crack in this image here is taken from my study site. The horizontal spacing between the strings is about 50 centimeters. So that gives you an idea of the scale of this crack, somewhere around 20 centimeters in diameter, aperture. And what you can tell from the picture here is that the crack is very irregular. The aperture changes as you go along the crack, and orientation changes in space. Additional complications, we can tell that knowing from pit sampling and other vertisol morphology information, we can tell that these cracks are not only very complex at the surface, but complex in the subsurface. They're not straight features. They're very tortuous, and they have highly irregular subsurface geometries as well. So one method we may be able to monitor surface cracking is using electrical resistivity. In lab studies, we find that when measuring just the simple soil matrix, electrical resistivity is a function of water content, solute concentration, and clay surface charge. And so if we want to kind of draw an analog to hydraulics, resistivity would be the inverse of conductivity. And so in soil water, we talk about hydraulic conductivity, so the ability of a media to transmit water, electrical conductivity would be the ability of a media to transmit electrical charge. Resistivity, simply the ability of a media to resist movement of charge. And now moving to a bulk soil, we start making measurements in the field. We have additional, in addition to these water content, solute concentration, and clay charges affecting resistivity, we also see soil structure and cracking affecting resistivity. In a simple 2D case, we can measure resistivity using a dipole-dipole array. So we see here the dipole on the left is injecting current, which flows along these kind of blue pathways through the soil. We move to some remote location, and we measure a voltage potential. Then we can back calculate out the resistivity of the soil using a certain geometric factor constant. And what we see is that resistivity measurements in a certain setup are integrated over a volume of soil. As we expand the distance of this n factor between the two dipoles, we're integrating over a larger and larger volume. previously, people have done work measuring vertisols using resistivity. Amidou and Dunbar published a paper in Geoderma in 2007. We see the graph on the left shows their lab calibration. So resistivity is on the x-axis and soil water contents on the y-axis. So we can tell at high soil water contents, we have low resistivities, and we have this negative log decrease with water content. So lower water contents give us much higher resistivities. So moving into the field case, they made 2D vertical slices. So here on the X is the electrode position along their survey, and the Y is depth through the profile. And so they have correlated their resistivity contents with soil water contents. So hot values represent high resistivity or low soil water contents, and cool values would be associated with low resistivity and high soil water contents. If these things, So if we look at the surface, we'd expect to see low soil water contents at the surface during drying periods and high soil water contents in the subsurface. So the structure of this image seems to make sense, but when we start looking at the actual values of water contents, something is rotten in Denmark. We look at the high soil water contents and low resistivities. We see the values here. You might not be able to read that in the back, but that's 70% soil water content, which is not possible really in a field setting. So that brings us to our question. How do cracking and water content interact in a 3D resistivity image? And today we'll be focusing just kind of on the plot scale, so small field setup. Our field site is on a Burleson clay. It's a fine smectitic udic hapless dirt. It's found just outside of College Station here at the Star. Side of our diagram of our field site. This is our 4.5 by 5 meter plot. Cracks have been painted in blue so you can see them a little better, and the little white tubes here are our neutron access locations. So to make our resistivity measurements in the field, we're using equipment from AGI. It's the SuperSting R8 Resistivity IP meter. It's an 8-channel meter, so it can make 8 simultaneous measurements. We've set up with a radial dipole-dipole array. So this is a full 3D measurement. We're using just a standard 3/8-inch stainless steel stake set on a half-meter space. Our final array is 110 electrodes, so it's 10 by 11 in dimension. And we end up with somewhere around 2,900 data points for a survey. Image on the right is our SuperSting setup. Word of caution to anyone who's thinking about doing this. We have a big rat's nest of cables here, and this is only a 56 electrode setup. So when we move to the full 100 meter or full 110 electrodes, you can imagine the amount of cabling gets quite outrageous. So how do we move from this set of data points to a final image? Well, as I mentioned earlier, each resistivity value is kind of integrated over a volume of soil. So we can't simply plot the values in a map and interpolate between them. We need some more complicated method to do that. So we may not know where the points are in space, but we do have a pretty good idea of how current flows within a subsurface given a set of resistivities. So what we can do, we have these forward models. We can break our subsurface down into a set of known estimated resistivities. And then our challenge then becomes to using our known model to find the set of resistivities that best fits our data. In geophysics, they like to call this process inversion. It's simply a trial and error approach. So we try a set of resistivities, test them, see how well they fit, change our resistivities, and continue. Because this is kind of a trial and error setup, we never really are going to reach a true solution. There's always some amount of error, and within that error term, you could have several sets of resistivities that could meet or equally match your data. Because of that, we find that there's no real exact solution for any resistivity image. More specifics on our inversion process. It's a systematic search, trial and error approach, and we finally, after an X number of iterations, we choose some criteria to accept our image. For us, it was a RMSE of less than 5%. Like I had mentioned earlier, solutions are non-unique. and we're using AGI's Earth Imager 3D. It's an Occam's inversion, so it's smoothness constrained. It tries to find nice, smooth, pretty looking models. It uses a conjugate gradient search with a finite difference forward solution. In the field, we measured volumetric soil water content using neutron probes. We measured the extent of cracking by simply painting the cracks and taking a picture of them. And then we measured resistivity using the techniques I discussed earlier. So if we were to look at this first set of data, this is for a 40-centimeter depth slice. The image on your left is our resistivity. It's a horizontal slice through our resistivity image. The scale bar here is the log of the resistivity. So we end up with cool colors associated with low resistivity, hot colors associated with high resistivity. And we see these two main features here and here, a very low resistivity, very high resistivity. If we move to the image on the right, this is interpolated soil water contents. So soil water was measured at these black neutron access tubes, and the scale bar, cool colors associated with high soil water contents and hot colors associated with low soil water contents. So what we see is in the center of the image, an area of low soil water content, which based on a theory, we would expect to see associated with high resistivity. However, when we look at the resistivity image, what we see is no real structure in the center of the image. So if we were to move to a 80-centimeter depth slice, so moving down into our resistivity and water content models, we see a similar area of low soil water content, and once again, no real change in resistivity due to water content. So if we see no real coupling between water content and resistivity at the plot scale, we know something else must be changing or dominating our resistivity data.
3 minutes.
Thank you. So we look at soil cracking as a possible outcome for that. So this is a map of our surface cracking, and what we see is that areas of high crack density are associated with these resistivity anomalies. We move deeper. First anomaly still shows up, but the second anomaly starts to disappear. So we're starting to measure below the depth of cracking, so the resistivity model is no longer sensitive to cracks. And finally, we move to 120 centimeters, and we see no resistivity anomalies. So what thing we can do, we went back to our resistivity model and averaged the resistivity at each location where we were measuring soil water content. So we plotted those average resistivities on the x-axis against the measured soil water contents and then laid that over the AMIDU calibration. And what we see are that for most of our data are consistently above and to the right of the calibration curve, showing that we're consistently measuring higher resistivities in the field than are predicted from the change in soil water content, meaning that something else, we're going to infer that it's cracks or soil structure are adding resistivity in the field scale. Conclusions: at the plot scale, cracking seems to dominate resistivity measurements, and the changes in resistivity in the surface are predominantly linked to cracking, and then as we move through the depth, we find that those relationships disappear. I'd like to acknowledge my fellow graduate student, Haley Neely, and our industrious little student workers, Heather Watson and Diana Fisher, without whose manual labor none of this would have been possible. And last but certainly not least, the NSF for their cash money. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Time for one question, if there is any. I have a question, actually. Do you think the high clay content in the Vertisol might be affecting your calibration then as well?
Well, the calibration from AMIDU and Dunbar was done on a Vertisol.
Oh, it was, okay.
So we'd expect very similar mineralogies. That was a Houston black, which is a fine smectitic thermic haplister. So very similar soil.
Okay, great. Thanks.